let's talk and let's laugh, cause I got so much to tell you, so let's go kick some art.
Kia ora, and welcome to Kickass, proudly brought to you this July by Planet Welcome. Let's start that again, shall we? Kia ora, and welcome to Kickass, proudly brought to you this July by Shoreside Theatre's production of And Then There Were None by Agatha Christie at the Pubhouse. Kick Arts is Aotearoa's comprehensive art show brought to you on Planet FM 104.6 and streaming live around the globe thanks to our podcasts, which you can download from planetaudio.org.nz or find us on Spotify. On tonight's show, we're talking theatre. So to kick it all off, here is the latest track from Emily Bateman, Sixth Sense. Emily Bateman. Wow. But that was an interesting start to the night, I must say. For some reason, my headphones weren't working and I thought that none of you could hear me and it kind of threw me off. But anyway, I'm here, you can hear me, and I'm joined in studio now by our first guest of the evening. Kia ora, Adam, how are you?
I'm good, mate. It's really good to see you.
Lean right into that so we can hear you nice and loudly.
I'm good.
There we go.
It's good.
But we can pick you up now. Yeah, it's bizarre tonight. We're having one of those nights. So you're here to talk about something that you were last on here. We were trying to work this out before we came on air, whether it was about 2.5 years ago, we think. But we're here to talk about Man Lessons.
Yes.
So you came on a long time ago because it was right at the start, and now it's kind of at another port of call, isn't it?
Yeah, look, it's the longest project I've heard of. I think. We started filming in 2016. And yeah, I came out as trans and I was in my last year of drama school and I was like, I feel like this might be interesting and my role is explaining things in front of people in a performative kind of entertaining way. maybe I should do that about whatever it is that happens to me next. So I called up a friend of mine who was making documentary films at the time. They were making lots of short form docos and traveling the world chasing natural disaster response projects and making media for them. And I was like, do you want to hang out and make a doco of whatever it is that happens to me next? And they were like, sure. So we started hanging out late 2015, early 2016, filming doco footage. And yeah, the project was just dragging on and I was like, I'll make a show, eh? Why don't I make a show? So that happened for the first time in 2021. I got funding to make a live show that uses doco footage from those early days of my gender transition and tells the story.
Actually, I think that was when you were last on.
Yeah,
because we talked about the fact that you were, because you actually brought your videographer in with you to the studio, to our old studio. That's how long ago it was.
Yeah. Benny came in with me then. So we've been in studio. But I think that you were right that I was also on Zoom sometime. Maybe that was when we almost had the season that was actually cancelled because of COVID in Wellington.
Yeah, probably. Yes, that sounds about right. Yeah.
Yeah. So the first like iteration of the show got cancelled once for health reasons, cancelled the second time for COVID reasons, and then finally premiered at BATS in 2022. And since then, yeah, it's had three seasons so far. We were there, we were at Whangarei Fringe, and then we were in the basement studio space in 2023, and that was the last time that it happened.
So how much of that original filming and things like that are in your live performance? Are they at all?
So imagine that you're watching a documentary, but the narrator of the documentary is there in the room.
Yep.
And they're the person that the documentary is about.
Okay.
That's the show.
Cool.
Yeah. And it's like not like filming is like video footage is happening the whole time. Sometimes I'm just telling the story, but it's really strongly supported by the video footage.
Cool. Yeah. Does that help? Like, how does it work? Because obviously this story is about you and it must be very near and dear. And you know how sometimes when you write something and it's your own, it's really hard to kind of give it away? Does that make sense?
Do you mean to the audience?
Yeah. And like the, I mean, how do you go about writing something that's so about you and that you're so in the thick of?
The biggest problem, mate, is like, what even is the story? You know, it's like 10 years of my life. Like, what is the story of my life over 10 years? That's really complicated.
Yeah.
There's a lot of threads and I'm like, is this interesting or important or relevant? Like, what is the through line here? What's the point? So that, I think, was the biggest barrier to even making the project in the first place was like, documentary filmmakers have an enormous job of just identifying the narrative.
Yeah.
Because they just kind of follow people or a story around with a camera. And,
then they hope something jumps out at them and goes, ooh, there's the line.
This, like, 10 years of this person's life is about this thing, you know, and hang the story off that. So that was really difficult, but I worked. The answer is get someone from the outside, you know.
Yep.
So I'd done a bunch of brainstorming with myself and Benny, the filmmaker. We were like, oh, maybe we structure it like this. Maybe it's about that. And then we would kind of just did all of these brainstorming sessions and got to the point where we were like, we have no idea. What we need is a director to come in and tell me what my life story is about. So we first worked with, do you know Ni Dekasreihana?
I know the name, yeah.
They're another non-binary Māori performer. And I knew them from Te Pau days. They're just like kick butt in everything that they do. They're an incredible actor, director. They like make visual arts and they're a friend of mine, just like really trusted person. Because that's the other thing is like it's my gender transition, mental health collapse, like identity unraveling, re-raveling. Like, I don't want to.
You definitely needed someone that you could totally trust.
Yeah. So that's why it was just me and Benny. And then we were like, I think Ni could help. I think I trust that person.
Yeah.
So what they ended up doing was they were with me for the initial sort of like consolidation and rewriting process, they watched all of the footage. Like, they watched all of the documentary footage from 10
wow.
years of my life.
That would have been huge.
Yeah. And then they would set me homework where they're like, I want you to watch this bit and then do this journal entry, you know? Or they would, like, ask me a couple of questions and, yeah, so they helped me. Because it was also, like, it's you know how shit it is to watch yourself on video? Can I swear on here?
You can, yes, within context.
Yeah. Okay.
Shit's fine.
Yeah, watching yourself is shit. Reading your old diaries is shit. And this is like my old diary, but like a video of some of like the most difficult times in my life.
Mm.
I couldn't watch it, you know? Like, I'd watch it and I'd be really upset with myself, or I'd be really upset about what happened, or I'd feel guilty, or I'd feel embarrassed, you know? Like, so much to unpack, and it was just too hard for me to look.
Yeah.
And so Nee would, like, feed me little bite-sized pieces and kind of led me through this process of figuring out how to actually be really proud of what happened and, like, find compassion and empathy for myself through that time. And it was really special, like,
yeah.
really special.
Yeah.
But we never finished the rehearsal process because Omicron hit.
Right.
So we never finished writing the play or finished rehearsing it and then, like, had the kind of, like, completion process of doing the show. So I had all of this pent-up energy with no kind of satisfaction at the end.
Wow.
Which was, yeah, terrible and exhausting. And then all through that Omicron lockdown, I was just, like, doing a lot of free writing, trying to, like, yeah, finish this thing. And then I can't remember how long it was before we had new dates at BATS. And then, yeah, so I'm kind of like sitting on this unfinished project. And then I hit up, Nee wasn't available for the dates that we got, the second set of dates. So I got Eve Gordon to come. And
right.
Eve is another very dear friend of mine, completely trusted individual. I love their artistic vision and the way that they hold and move through projects. And, yeah, they're just like, I really deeply love and trust Eve.
Mm-hmm.
So they came and helped me finish it. And, yeah, hold the kind of like mechanical construction of the thing, like lights and set and staging, where Nee was right back in the kind of like formative writing phase. So yeah, Eve helped me finish the show and then put it on the stage.
Awesome.
And then every time I've done the show, it's like another go at figuring out what I want to say and what I feel about that time and what I feel about myself and what I feel about the world, you know? So it's always slightly different.
Mm-hmm.
We're in rehearsals next week. We start tomorrow. And we've got me, Benny. Benny's on stage the whole time with the camera. So it's me telling the story, but then Benny, the documentary filmmaker, is like always kind of in the shadows, but then we have a few scenes where we actually interact and you get to see me playing out the relationship that I've had with Benny and with the camera through, you know, they're like, it's kind of like this like vlogging kind of like diary where I've used the camera as this very impartial, non-judgmental place for me to process what I'm thinking and what I'm feeling and then help me kind of like ground and get a handle on what it is that I actually am experiencing. But because Benny is holding the camera, they've seen me
yeah.
go through all of that processing stuff.
And that must be huge for them as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I think in our first meeting, they were like, I think we might be quite good friends at the end of this.
Yeah.
Yeah,
he probably knows more about you than, well, as much about you as you know about you, you know? Like, he's been in the thick of it and
yeah.
seen so much, like probably more than most people in your life.
Yes. Mm. More concertedly earlier on. But, yeah, I just trust them. Benny has, when we were doing the Wellington season, I think, realized that they're non-binary. So Benny uses they, them pronouns, not he, him pronouns. I'll probably pull you up on that if it keeps coming up. But
it's all right. Thanks for letting me know.
Yeah, no worries. Yeah, they like, there are things that I could tell, you know, like, you can tell your diary things you can't tell any other person.
Yeah.
And so they were just there when I was doing that.
Mm. yeah.
Yeah. And I couldn't, I actually couldn't pick a better person to hold that space in my life. They're so kind.
So now that you're kind of hitting, well, I'm going to say it's the kind of a third iteration, because the first one got cancelled because of COVID, like you said, and then the second one was bats, and this is kind of third performance-wise?
No, we had, the first was cancelled, then we had bats, then we went to Whangarei Fringe Festival, and we've played at the Basement in 2020.
So this is five.
This is five.
Yeah. This is five, okay. So from that, have you changed what you want people to get out of it? Do you think, has that changed in any kind of way? Like, what do you think the audience are going to get from this?
The world is completely different now than it was in the beginning of 2023. It's a really, really different place to be confused about gender, or disruptive about gender, or, you know, what
vocal
about gender.
Mm.
Yeah, it's a really, really scary place to be vocal about gender right now. And what my, like, what I have to say about, I don't know how we're going to make it through this conversation. And there are many questions that people are grappling with right now that I don't know the answers to. But what I definitively know is what happened to me.
Mm.
And so what people who come to the show realize is that this is a, like, it's a real person.
Yeah.
All of these people are real people. And, like, everyone who comes to the show, like, it doesn't matter if you have thought about your own gender a lot or not. You've thought about who you are and your place in the world a lot.
Mm.
And so I think that what it offers is, like, we're all allowed to not know the answers to who we are and what we want and what we're doing. Like, we're all allowed to not know who we are a bit. Mm. And I think that the more that we shout at each other about that not knowing, the more we kind of, like, cage it and hide it and, like, bury it, and it makes everything worse. Yeah.
I suppose, too, there's probably a lot of people out there that will come and see this who may not be asking those questions, but through watching this might actually change their reality on maybe how they even interact with other people.
Say that again.
So the audience members may not be considering it for themselves, but through watching this may change their perception on how to deal with other people.
Oh, totally.
And externally, because, you know, I do think a lot of people in the world struggle greatly with how do I even speak to someone that's maybe going through this. And even it's not just the gender stuff, it's the mental health stuff as well. I mean, that was huge for you at that time.
Yeah.
That was a big part of you, you know. And I think to be able to sometimes sit, how much is the fourth wall broken? There's a total tangent.
100%. There's never a fourth wall. I mean, as people come into this theatre, I give them hugs.
Right.
And, like, the whole time I'm directly addressing the audience.
Right.
It's very, very intimate. And the staging is... So one of the things that I want to do with the staging this time is that it's... My sister's getting married in October in Scotland.
Right.
Okay, I don't get to travel internationally very often, and I haven't been back to the United States since I was 19. That's where I was born.
Yeah.
So the plan was for me to go through the United States and go to all the places where I came from and see my family that I haven't seen for, you know, a really long time on the way to Scotland for the wedding.
But going through the United States at the moment probably isn't a very good thing to do.
Exactly. This has been the plan for years, and then when things started going a little bit sideways, I was like, oh, this was, okay, rewind to whatever, 2 years ago, a year and a half ago, I was like, things are looking not that great. I wonder if I could do my show in a few places across the States, in like non-theater venues, like at this kind of like library or this like activists group or at this kind of like, I used to go to the Unitarian Universalist Church. It's quite a not secular, but non-dogmatic, I guess, church. Just like safe places where people want to have these conversations. What if I bring the show there while I'm going across the states? That's not happening now. The likelihood that I wouldn't even make it to the wedding is quite high, and I'm not willing to risk not going to my sister's wedding. But I set up this Matariki season with the intention of reworking the show so that I can operate all of the tech, Benny and I can operate all the tech on the stage, and whatever tech we use can be packed in my car or into suitcases. And then the show can go to a library, to a university.
Great.
To someone's home. For that like non-venue tour across the stage, which isn't happening, but I can take it now to, you know, like a library in Gore.
Because, I mean, complete person not knowing, how many, like, do Rainbow Youth and things like that put on talks for, or are there kind of associations through Aotearoa that kind of provide places for, say, younger people or older people that are struggling with gender and things like that? Like, are there opportunities that way to maybe help or Well, I don't want to say perform. I know it's a performance, but you know what I mean.
There are a lot of educational pieces of work that are happening, either in schools or in workplaces or in communities by a bunch of different, bunch of different organizations. I know that, and I know that, you know, like Inside Out do a lot of work in workplaces and communities. Yes, the answer is yes. And there's also a lot of social events that happen.
So do you think man lessons could be something that could fit into
that kind of network?
Those kind of things? You know, because I remember, and it must have been in our very first interview, and you were saying that one of the things that you found when you decided, or when you came to that point where you were ready to transition, that there wasn't a lot of stuff out there for you to see and read and help you on that journey.
Yeah, so that was over 10 years ago.
Yeah, so there is more now?
A lot more.
So that's grown?
Yeah. So back
and developed?
When I first came out, I had to go digging to find any information about, like, I'd never even heard of transgender when I came out. This was in 2015. I found all of these, like, beautiful pockets of YouTube or wherever where people who had kind of chronicled their transition and shared it in short video form or in blogs or whatever. And they were like, day 36 on testosterone, I've just noticed this kind of thing, you know, whatever it is. But I really had to go searching for the information, and I was like, this is actually really beautiful. Like, aside from the fact that I think that I want to go through something similar, like, this is a really amazing investigation of the human experience, and like people going, oh, how does my social situation transform when people see me as a different gender? Like, how do people interact with me differently? What's happening to my body? What's this sensory experience like when you're dominated by estrogen versus testosterone? Like, it's really amazing stuff. But I had to go looking for it. And so I was like, well, what if I made a thing that was like, all of this is made kind of for, by, about, and for trans people?
Yeah.
What if I made a thing that was for everybody? And that was quite a novel idea at that time. Since then, a lot of people have made content like that. And now, with how kind of like politicized, just people, there's a whole, I mean, like really terrible situation in terms of how upset people are on all sides of quite a divided social networks conversation around gender now. It's like now every person has an opinion. So there's an onslaught of information, but it's all conflicts with itself. Whereas before it was not very much information and it was all by and for trans people. So I've forgotten your question, but it's...
No, it's fine. It's good.
Yeah.
What you're saying's great. I was, it was just more about, does this fit in? But you were saying there's more education now, and I was asking, is there more education than there was when this began for you? Which is great to hear that there is. Like, it's good to hear that there has been development forward, but it's very sad that given the time in the world now, that it's so hard. It's so hard to be genuine and yourself because of how these conflicting views and people's attitudes seem to be.
Yeah. I also want to, like, I also have a lot of empathy for the people who, like, I'm obviously quite liberal with my personal take on gender, and the difficulties that that brings when I'm trying to talk about it. But I also have a lot of empathy for people who don't get it, are confused and more kind of conservative or on the fence about their ideas and the way that, that they tend to be just yelled at, you know, and immediately rejected. I don't think that I can blame anybody for not having lived the same life that I've lived.
Yeah.
But we're all like, yeah, so many people are like, you should think this already.
Yeah.
Rather than like...
But who says, yeah. Who actually says that we should think this already? Yeah. No, it's difficult. All right, let's take a quick music break. We're going to hear from someone you know, actually. So this is Greta O'Leary with The Greatest Peace I Have Ever Known.
Why stop to smell the flowers? Never knew life could be like this. Done.
And that was Greta. And funnily enough, I didn't realise, Adam, I knew that you knew Greta, but as we started playing that, you looked at the screen and went, that's me!
I'm Greta's official videographer, and yeah, that was the first time that I was actually performing was in that. I took the photo, yes. Yes, I know Greta very well.
Yeah.
We are constant collaborators in many areas of life.
Well, we always play their new drops, whenever they're dropping new songs and that, yes, you know, we play them. Really, because I feel that, I mean, one, we try to play only Kiwi music, unless we're promoting a show or something that has music with it, you know, then we're going to play it. But I just love the vibe. You know, on a Sunday night, you kind of don't want really hard, beaty, kind of, you know how some Kiwi music has that?
Yeah.
A little bit more vicious, active.
Party, I don't know.
Yeah. So, I mean, something like that is just perfect for a Sunday night where you just kind of, I just imagine. I'd like to think that people listening to us are sitting with a cup of tea or coffee in their hand, or maybe a wine, you know, glass of red wine, and they're just kind of,
I really hope you have wine.
Yeah, a cozy kind of, we're listening and we're talking about the arts here.
Yeah. She, one of her earliest reviews, my favourite Paul quotes, someone wrote a review of her, I think her EP in Argentina, and it was translated into English. And they said something like, to listen to this, you should put on headphones, lie on the floor, and take care of the interior a bit. Which I just absolutely adore.
And take care of the interior,
a bit. Take care of the interior a bit.
So do you think they meant the person's interior, your wellness, your aura, your...
You know, close your eyes, listen to the music, and just take care of your interior a bit.
I love that. That's so cozy. Now, take us back even further than 10 years ago. Where did the arts start for you? What made you enter this industry?
I don't know. I was one of the... why did I enter the industry?
Well, the arts world. There we go.
Okay.
This environment. What took you into this environment?
I was 2 years old.
Okay. That's very specific.
My mother took me to some sort of storytelling convention.
Right.
And there were people just like telling all of these world, kind of like folk stories from different world traditions in a theatre. And then she left the room for some reason and left me in the room briefly. And then she came back to the room and I was on stage telling a story of my own. So that's how it started.
I love that. So you were just quietly, as a calm little two-year-old, just made yourself welcome.
I've got a story. I'll tell a story.
Great.
Okay. Yeah.
I wonder what it was. Do you know what the story was about? Has mum ever told you?
Yeah. No, I remember it. I remember doing it. It was something about how the ostrich got a long neck. And he got tricked to go to the watering hole by a crocodile multiple times, and then the crocodile bit his head, and then he was trying to pull away from the crocodile and it stretched his neck.
Wow. Yeah. Was that a folk story that you had heard from somewhere, or did you make that up?
No. I'd heard it from somewhere. Lord knows where, but I'd heard it from somewhere.
That is crazy. And then, so after being a two-year-old telling your story and taking charge of the space, what happened?
I think they did offer. I've always liked telling stories in front of people. My dad was a fantastic storyteller on really long car trips. He had these characters called Catherine and Elizabeth. They were my middle name at the time and my sister's middle name, who would go on all of these adventures together in the Amazon, or there was a giant cat that kept eating Cleveland. And he would just fill the space on long car rides by making shit up, like, and telling these epic adventures. And he would crack himself up in the front seat, like, constantly surprising himself.
Did he
do
voices and stuff?
Not that much, but he had a wild imagination. He would like make up animals, you know?
Wow.
And, like, with really vivid descriptions and, So I loved that. And then I would read, I would read constantly, and I would read to my sister, and I would do all of the voices whenever I was reading. My parents would read to both of us quite a lot. So I just always really loved story. It is so fun and silly, and kind of like open up all these, I don't know, whatever. I don't need to go esoteric on it. I like stories. They make me feel like I've got options for how to be and what to do in the world. And then I did a bunch of acting all through school. Oh, I had a very strange growing up period. I didn't We lived in Cambodia for 2.5 years after we left the States. Did you know that?
No, I don't think I did, no. That's an interesting place to go to.
Yeah. And then, anyway, when I went to school here, high school, I started doing drama in high school. I did a lot of Shakespeare, and I loved it, and then I just, after my OE, I was like, I know what I want to do.
Because you said earlier, how old were you when you came to New Zealand?
11.
11, okay. So was Shakespeare through... I'll get told off by Dawn for saying it's the Sheila Wynn, but the University of Otago, Sheila Wynn, Shakespeare, something or other. It's that really, really long name.
University of Otago, Sheila Wynn, Shakespeare in Schools competition. Yes. Yes, it was through that. I did the National Shakespeare in Schools production 3 years running, and then they always had a quiz night, and she would put all of those acronyms in the quiz, and you would... like have to answer and you'd get points and it was a big relay race with the other teams. Yeah.
Okay.
University of Otago, Sheila Wynn, Shakespeare in Schools competition. Yes. Is that still going?
Yes.
Oh, excellent. I know that they had big funding struggles recently.
No, it's still going. And I think actually I saw on someone's post the other day that Dawn is currently across in with a group over at the Globe.
Oh, great. Oh, Dawn.
Yeah. So... that's going to leads me on to my next question for you. So, if you were accepting a BAFTA or whatever award it's going to be, who was your inspiration or your mentors? Who would you be thinking as you accepted your award, do you think?
Oh,
like,
no,
who is it through your life?
That now without time to prepare.
Quick, because the music's going to play, you know. They only give you a certain amount of time before they play the music and kick you off the stage.
Probably my grandmother. She was desperately unhappy for almost her entire life and then suffered a major stroke when she was in her 60s, I think, or maybe 70s. Anyway, and after that she found play and poetry and she completely... she just turned into a totally different person. So that's my, like, cheekiness, I think, is hers. And then my mum's. So that's where I blame. That's who I blame for my naughtiness. And my dad for, yeah, his just kind of love of story. I went to UCOL in Palmerston North. And Jaime Dorna was enormously influential on me as a Chilean actor and director, such a diva, absolute drama queen. But yeah, he just pushed this cohort of like ragtag late teens, early 20s idiots who just didn't know what we were doing with our lives, and he'd really like whipped us into shooting, you know, just like really reaching for the moon in a massive way. We achieved things there that I had no idea was possible for a group of people like that. And then Unitech, all the tutors at Unitech were beautiful, but then I really found my feet after that when I was a founding whānau member of Te Pō Theatre. I learned about the how to make shows and how to be with other people when you're making shows together at Te Pō.
Which, of course, was where we met.
Yeah, with more Shakespeare.
That's the one.
Shakespeare and Rubber Chickens.
That's the one.
Yeah.
In the old Te Pō. And now to think, like, when they were celebrating their birthday, and I was just like going, really? Have they really been there for... it kind of feels like they've been there for longer than that. But then at the same time, it's kind of like, wow, it only feels like yesterday that we were listening to basketballs during performances.
Yeah, and like, you know? Praying it doesn't rain because it drips into the electrical box.
Yeah, crazy times. All right, well, back to man lessons because that's what we're here to talk about. So tell us, when is it on? Where can people go to get their tickets and all those business things?
Okay, business. It's on very soon. We open the 29th of July and we run the 29th of July until the 2nd of August at the basement downstairs on the main stage. So you can get your tickets either at iTicket if you look for Man Lessons or the basement's website.
And you're doing a pay what you want as well, aren't you?
Yes.
So how does that work?
You can pay what you choose. The minimum is $8 and the maximum is $100. I think you can't pay more than $100.
And does that mean they pay as they're leaving or before they arrive?
That's a really important question. They pay you pay when you book your ticket.
Right. But can you pay more? What happens if I paid $15 and they come and see it and I go, I want to give Adam another $85 to make it up to $100?
Yeah. I actually don't know the answer to that, and it's a really important question. I will get the answer.
Yeah, let us know, because I've got... So if you weren't sure where to get those tickets, if you jump onto kickarts.org.nz and onto our event page, you will see Man Lessons listed there. So when we know about pay what you want and how it works and whether you can pay more later, because I think that's really important, because I think
important,
some people might just pay the minimum and then go, hang on a second, that was way worth more than $8.
Yeah, I would totally encourage you to hedge your bets, buy a ticket for $8, and
maybe
then
you just need a bucket at the door. Maybe Benny should take their hat off, and be standing at the door so that as people leave, they can. Oh no, because that would mean they'd need cash, and people don't carry cash these days. Maybe they could be standing there with an FPOS machine.
Yeah, I think that there's a way to make donations after.
Good,
I'm pretty sure that there is.
Cool,
I'll find out.
That would be very importantly cool.
Yeah.
Okay, so we've got 14. Did you say the 29th? So you've got 16 days.
Yeah.
So 2 weeks of rehearsing, basically, and then it's on.
And then it's on.
So right in this moment, give me one word, without thinking about it, without explanation, that describes how you're feeling about arriving in rehearsal tomorrow morning.
Fucking stoked. I'm fucking stoked.
There we go.
That was a big swear.
Yeah, that was a big swear. But you're allowed to because it was in context, so it's okay. Well, you know what? It's been great to catch up with you because it has been a long time. I can't wait to get along to the Basement Theatre to see this thing that we've talked about, as we've said, twice before, and to see how it's organically energised and grown and developed over the last number of years.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for sharing so much, because as we said at the start, it is such a personal journey for you, and it's got so many tangents, isn't the right word, but you need to go on a tangent to be able to explain what's going on, right?
Yeah, isn't that just life?
Yeah, very much so, but life acted out on stage as life. Like, that's huge. There's so many things there. So people, get along to the Basement Theatre, support this amazing mahi, and we look forward to hearing from you another time, because we didn't even talk about other stuff like Dust Palace and things like that. So you've got so much more to share, but we can do that next time. We're going to go out with a song from the Beths, and this is No Joy. That was the Beths, No Joy. Now, it's quite funny that it's called No Joy because I was watching a little bit of the official video as that was playing. And that video is definitely extremely joyful. It's full of puppets and all sorts. So go and check it out. It's called No Joy by the Beths. Now, during that time, we did a bit of a swap over. I'm doing well without Stephen, kind of. I can't every now and then push the wrong button, but I'm doing okay. That was me telling myself that I was doing okay. It was kind of a bit of a subconscious blah, blah. But anyway, back to who's in the studio now. So we've had a changeover, and now I'm joined by three of the team from Shoreside's latest production, and it's their annual Agatha Christie. So that, I'm sure, inspires a lot of you, because who doesn't love a bit of Agatha Christie? But anyway, I'm going to turn round to the person that's been here before. So, kia ora, Christine, how are you?
Kia ora, I'm good.
Do you want to introduce your team and tell us what they're doing in the show? I'll call it your team.
My team, sure. No. Hi there, everyone. So, I'll just first explain that I am part of Shoreside Committee, so I'm just here representing Shoreside, but with me, I have amazing cast members of the show. So I have Terry and Libby.
Fantastic. Yes. So, hi guys, hi.
Kia ora, kia ora.
So first of all, Libby, tell us, who do you, well, first of all, tell us the name of the show.
Oh, yes. Sorry. The show is And Then There Were None by the one, the only Agatha Christie, as you said.
And what part do you play in this?
So I play the wonderful Mrs. Ethel Rogers, ooh, the wife of Mr. Thomas Rogers, who is another character in the show, and we are the housekeepers, you could say.
Oh, okay. So the fact that there's a housekeeper, that gives us, we're going to be like Agatha Christie, I reckon, and just put together a few clues. So we've got housekeepers. Mm-hmm. Okay, Terry, who do you play?
I play Miss Emily Brent. I am a spinster, very religious. The States were much too jazzified for her character, and so she moved over to jolly old England and to get away from that back in the 20s and 30s. And
oh, there's another clue.
She's a self-righteous... she's a peach. She's terrible.
Oh, wow. Okay. Great.
Mm-hmm.
And Kristen, have you been part of any of the rehearsals, being on the committee?
Unfortunately, I haven't. I've been very, very busy, but I'm hoping to catch either the tech rehearsal or dress rehearsal. I'm going to try sneak in, you know?
Fair enough. Well, first of all, I'd like to then say thank you very much to you and your committee, because you're actually our sponsors for this month here at Kakaats as well. So that's pretty cool.
No worries.
But for anyone that's been living under a rock or hasn't tuned into Kakaats before, because this isn't the first time for Shoreside to be here, tell us a little bit about Shoreside and what makes Shoreside Shoreside.
What makes Shoreside Shoreside? I find we're pretty unique in our own way. We love to support upcoming new artists, new actors, new creatives. We hold three core productions throughout the year. So we have our Shakespeare in the Park season during the summer, which is always very exciting. Just a little sneaky, let you know that it's our 30th next year. So
wow,
get along. It's going to be lots of fun.
Mm.
Then, of course, we have our Agatha Christie and midwinter thrillers and classic whodunits. Then we also have our one-act seasons, which kind of go on in between, and that's definitely for the fresh new artists to have a go in a smaller space, try out shows, try out acting or producing or whatever before they move into our bigger shows like Shakespeare and Agatha Christie. But yeah, I find it's just really good fun. We're a big family and we just love supporting everyone.
Fabulous. Well, thank you, Shoreside, for what you are doing. It's one of those tongue twisters a bit.
Yes, it is.
So, Libby, who's directing? Who's the artistic team?
It is the wonderful Michelle. I actually don't know Michelle's last name. She's just Michelle
Atkinson.
To me.
Michelle Atkinson.
Yes. There we go. And she is amazing. She's leading us and directing us. And it's been wonderful to work with her. She's been incredible.
And is this your first time out with Shoreside?
This was my first time with Shoreside. This is my first Auckland show. It's my Auckland debut, if you'd like.
So where are you from then?
I am from Kirikiriroa, Hamilton, so moved up in the world to a bigger city, and now here I am.
And did you do theatre in Hamilton before coming out?
Yes, I did. So I've done a small handful of shows from Hamilton. I dabbled in some summer Shakespeares as well. We also did the Shakespeare in the Park. So I'm well versed in there, but this is my first ever time doing an Agatha Christie, so super excited.
Cool. And what about you, Terry? Is this your first time with Shoreside as well?
It's no, Christine's laughing. No, this is, I've lost count, I think, maybe my third or fourth Agatha Christie, and I was in five or six Shakespeares. This has been my theatre fano since 2018. Yes. And I have gone to other, been very, very happy with other shows and for other committees and companies, but I did feel really good. We had our first walkthrough in the pump house, and it was like coming home. It felt really, really good today. And yeah, I've met some amazing, amazing people, and I met my partner through Shoreside Theatre.
Oh, that's gorgeous.
Yeah, so I'm really, really excited to do another Agatha Christie. She's just the best. Absolute best. And I read novels and I forget who done it, and it makes it for a really, really good night out where you have no idea what's coming. And even if you've read the novels or you've seen the dramatic miniseries or whatever, we are doing some new things, so it's really cool.
Now, do I detect a slight accent?
Oh, yes, for sure. That's very sweet that you said slight. Yeah, it doesn't go away. Yeah, I originally am from the States, from Miami originally, but I lived in New York and Houston, Texas, and Seattle, Washington. And but I'm a Kiwi now. I've got my passport. I'm like what I call an Amerikiwi. And this is home now, and it's been home for quite a long time. But yeah, I just celebrated my 9th Kiwiversary a couple weeks ago.
How fantastic.
Yeah.
Do you find that slight accent determines or has any say in what roles you do get cast for?
Totally. Yeah. Yeah, I'm sure that has been a barrier and for some auditions, which went to other people, absolutely understandably. And especially if it's, it has to be a British accent or especially a Kiwi accent. I can't do what you guys do. I love the accent. But I just can't. I can soften it. I can do quite a lot from all over the US in different accents. But yeah, I think that was one of the things that our director had to get over very fast. There was no way that I was going to be the classic uptight British woman doing this role. So we had to make some changes. So.
It adds to the charm of Miss Brent, though, I think. The southern charm.
Yeah, she's definitely kind of holy roller, Southern Baptist influences, where it's fire and brimstone and Old Testament. And yeah, so she's an interesting one.
Beautiful. So first run through today, walk through today at the Pump House.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. Lovely. And are they going traditional set, or are you allowed to tell us anything about that? If we got there, or is it all the exposed brickwork that makes the Pump House as beautiful as it is?
I wish... No, I think it wouldn't be a spoiler. We love to do the traditional kind of 30s, 40s, 50s. But it's, people who have been to Agatha Christie before at the Pump House with Shoreside will be very, very pleased. Very traditional, which is nice.
I got sent a couple of pictures today from tech, and I can say it's looking nice.
It's so cool,
That's the most fulsome set I've actually ever acted with, to be honest. So I was like, whoa, this is pretty cool.
Yeah, that's impressive because it's not even finished yet.
Is it a typical whodunit where it's kind of you're just in the lounge in the house the whole time?
Sure is.
Which I suppose allows it then to be a little bit more fulsome, because you can actually, because it's not like you're having to change the set and suddenly you're in the kitchen, or suddenly it's not, you know, we're not with the lead pipe in the library or anything like that.
Yeah. No, we're not. No. We're with an undetermined person with an undetermined weapon, probably just in the one room.
Yeah.
And I think that's always a good thing, if I can just quickly add, because then people can fully focus on the story and, you know, the performances as well, without having to worry about too many set changes, you know, so it keeps it really refined, which I like.
Mm-hmm. So Libby, tell us, what's been your biggest challenge to date with this role?
Oh, that is a fantastic question. I would say... this is quite a different role for me. I usually play quite masculine characters. So I think the biggest thing for me is, I guess, leaning into my femininity and really playing someone who's a bit more subservient, I guess you could say. Leaning into the femininity has been a bit of a challenge, but it's been really fun to explore that.
And then on the flip side, what's been the biggest joy or excitement in the role?
Meeting everyone in the cast and the crew. It's been great to make some theatre friends in Auckland. Yeah.
Cool. Turning my head the other way.
Yeah.
Terry knows she's getting the same questions.
I think...
biggest challenge?
Oh, gosh. Emily Brent is such a horrible person. So making her... there's no nuance, but adding something there where she's doing the Agatha Christie writing justice, where she's not an archetype, she's not just that stereotype, and there is layers to her, and there's reasons behind why she does things and the motivation. Discovering that is really, really interesting. I had to crack a history lesson today, just learning about some of the lack of welfare state in Britain in that time, which makes what my character does even more horrible. And so I think that's the challenge, is making her more than just the stereotypical one-dimensional that she can very easily become. And the people, it's really, really, like I said, it's lovely to be back working with Shoreside, but also meeting new people and getting to work with old friends is lovely. It's so fulfilling.
Yeah, it just creates a different environment too. If you have got that whānau feel and everything, you know, it just helps things flow, right?
Yes, very much. You feel like you could trust people. And I think that's a huge thing when you have a very, very limited amount of time to rehearse, and then you get thrown in, and we only just packed in today, and so we don't rehearse in the theater where we perform. And so that's a big challenge too. But knowing that you're with people who have just got you, and that makes it really, really nice to just kind of fall back on.
Yeah.
And if you have bad days as well, which we all have had.
It happens.
Yeah.
I have to ask this because being someone that works at the, has done shows at the Pump House and that, do you have a pathway behind the stage or do you have to do the gauntlet up the stairs along the back and down again?
We actually just teleport from one side to the other. It's the magic of the show.
Great.
We could keep that lie going.
The psych is going to be actually kind of part of the magic of the terrace. There are French doors and our characters sit and are sometimes taken from this mortal life in different places. Through the magic, we get to see or not see the whodunit happen. And so behind the psych is where we're going to kind of scurry back and forth. You guys, the Rogerses, do quite a lot of that because you're the help. You're going back and forth between all of the entrances. I don't know how you're going to do that. That's amazing.
Yeah. My dear husband, Thomas, will have to run probably quite a bit. He's back and forth the whole time.
Mm.
Luckily, I guess I'm just in the kitchen off to the side, you know, pop my head in every now and again. So not too bad for me.
And is this a two-actor or a three-actor? Like as in acts? Is it act one and act two with an interval?
Yes, she wrote it as three acts, each with two scenes, I think. And so we'll get you through how she wrote it, act two. And then there's a nice little interval where you could go and get yourself an ice cream, or a wine or two, and then, come back. And then it really like stuff happens.
Yeah.
So yeah, be prepared. Maybe just like two wines. We had a lady, if I could tell a story.
Yeah.
We had a lady two years ago, I think, who, she had a little, you know, a drop was taken at, interval, and she came back, and as the murderer was kind of like it, you could see it unravel. She was the last one out of 192 people to get it. And then she said when it was just like the kind of dun 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 part of the show, she was like, I don't get it. So we're very, very happy when people are excited about the show, but maybe, yeah, it's not a panto.
But then, see, that's another whole conversation maybe, but I do think that younger people coming to, and this is not putting down younger people, mm-mm, please bring young people to the theatre, it's really important. But I get so frustrated when, especially if they know people on the stage, the whole I'm going to call it the concert mentality.
Mm.
That especially in musicals, it's you know, that audience members feel it's okay to kind of scream and yell and call the name of the person, not the character, but the name of the person. Mm. Go, Libby! Woo! You know, or I don't mind people if a song ends kind of being like, yeah, that was, you know, or if they hit a high note, woo, like a little one. But when the whole audience is like making lots of noise, it's just like, why?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it can get very distracting for the actors as well. Yeah.
Yeah. When you're leaving a space for applause or whatever, when you're like, oh, this has not happened for the past two months.
Yeah, yeah.
But I mean, it happens anyway, like with, I don't know, some people might laugh at a space where, because you know the script so well and you've been watching it for 2 months or whatever during rehearsals, and all of a sudden this live audience is laughing at a line that you've never found funny before, and you're like, oh, and it kind of throws you off a little bit. You got to recollect yourself.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The good thing about Michelle, our director, is she's so good at vocalizing and she does laugh still. You know, she could probably do a one-woman show of this play. She knows it backwards and forwards, but she still laughs at some of the things, which is very, very good for us. And I don't know, maybe she's doing that on purpose.
because she knows that we are gonna.
Yeah, maybe.
Or maybe we're just that funny.
I think we're that funny.
I do think sometimes, though, when we're going through a process of putting on a production, you know, it gets to that point where I know as a director before that I've said, these guys need an audience. And quite often for that very reason of you just take for granted what other people, especially, again, if you're maybe of a different decade, you know, that you don't actually realise that the lines you're saying are actually hilarious and are going to be outwardly laughed at.
Yes. Or it's uncomfortable laughter, like some of the things that will go on as our play goes on, and some of the things that are said, and it is of its time, and so there is some light misogyny here or there, people saying things, and the audience can get quite uncomfortable, and I found that people giggle just because it's just a natural kind of a nervous laughter almost.
And the other thing about the Pump House is the audience are actually quite close.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, we... Yeah, double A or triple A or whatever.
Double A.
It's right by the stage.
And you, which I love. I think it's really, really cool. I'm doing Shakespeare in the amphitheater is one of my favorite things in the whole wide world because you can see the audience and then you interact with them and you feel their energy. And I quite like seeing the people right there and their faces. What really freaked me out one time is I didn't know that I would have two students coming to the show, and then there they are in the front row. And it was like, oh, okay.
It's the hot seats.
It is, yeah.
Well, I'd just like to add that A5 and A6, one of A6's own was adopted by Tickets.
Yay.
And A5 was adopted by Stage Antics, which is my production company.
Fabulous.
So those two seats were adopted by us. So
there
that's my little claim to fame.
Yay!
Now, we're going to take a quick music break, but when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more and unpack your arts journeys. But in the meantime, we are jumping over to a new track from Kylie Price called John and Julie Stone.
Caught me in the middle of staring into space. You wrapped your arms around me in the late August sun. One hand around my waist, one hand around your fate. Don't drop it, we promise we'll quit someday. I moved away from the coast of California, the youngest of four daughters to John and Julie Stone. You're the only son of Jenny, single mother from East Surrey. Moved to the city in your 20s, now you call East London home. We spend our evenings walking, scarves ripped around their face. Winter's always warm in Trafalgar Square. Seems like just yesterday, December felt far away. Although we're in the grave, we've come such a long way. Don't rock it, cause we're on it, let seasons change. I moved away from the coast of California, the youngest of four daughters, John and Julie Stone. You're the only son of Jenny, single mother from East Surrey. Moved to the city in your 20s, now you call East London home. I'm a novice in commitment, you're an expert in long distance. It's an art to find the perfect in between. Our friends are having babies while we play Juchek or Mary. I wonder if we're destined for the same. It's okay if we don't know, it's okay if we don't know. It's okay, it's okay, it's okay if we don't know. It's okay if we don't know. It's okay if we don't know. It's okay, it's okay. It's okay if we don't know. I moved away from the coast of California, the youngest of four daughters to John and Julie Stone. You're the only
single mother from Missouri, moved to the city in your 20s, now you call East London home. I'm a novice in commitment, you're an expert at long distance, it's an art to find the perfect in between. Our friends are heaven babies, while we page your chick or marry, I wonder if we're destined for the same. It's okay if we don't know, it's okay if we don't know, it's okay, it's okay, it's okay if we don't know. It's okay if we don't know. It's okay if we don't know. It's okay, it's okay. It's okay if we don't know.
And that was Kylie Price. So all the music you've been hearing tonight, of course, is Kiwi music, and we love hearing new songs. So if you're dropping something, well, hopefully a song, not a plate or anything like that, but next time you're writing something or developing something, or maybe your neighbours, maybe you can hear your neighbour constantly singing and you want to dob them in, drop us a line at info@kickarts.org.nz so that we can dob them in, bring them in, talk to them about their creation, play their song maybe. Might be their first time on the radio, who knows? But anyway, back to our studio now. So we're going to unpack a little bit about you guys. So let's start with you, Terry. Where did theatre? And maybe because you're American, it's a theatre with an E-R, although that means it's the venue, right?
Yeah.
E-R means the venue and R-E is the doing of?
Honestly, as soon as I moved here, I changed everything, like, you know, Microsoft Word to British English, and I never looked back, and so now it's good. I did the nativity plays in school, and then as I got a little bit older in primary school, we did like little musicals, and I always liked showing off, and that was always a thing that I liked to do as a kid. And we had plays in middle school and high school, and I absolutely fell in love with it. I was very, very honored to be given Eliza Doolittle in Pygmalion and Annie Sullivan in The Miracle Worker. And so those two really, really were kind of the linchpins. And then I didn't do anything all through university. Graduated, moved on, and then I moved here, and I was trying to look for things to do to get me settled and into the community, and Henry V and Twelfth Night came up for this Shoreside company, and I said, well, I'll audition, and the rest is history. So I was very, very lucky. This is back in the Carol Dumbleton era, and I was talking to one of our cast members who I met. She and I were Henry V's brothers in that show, and now we play opposite each other. And so it's just been a beautiful kind of full circle moment. But yeah, we were talking about how much has changed with Shoreside, and how much has stayed the same, and just we keep coming back to it.
Fantastic. Libby, what kicked it off for you?
Kind of same, eh? It's the attention that it gives you as a kid, and I guess that's kind of infectious. But I didn't really do much like proper theatre shows, I guess, until high school, where we actually did full productions and whatnot. I believe my first show, or first like proper school show, would have been in the Little Mermaid musical, actually, at my high school. And then my first proper big role was in August Osage County. I can't remember the character's name, but it's played by Meryl Streep in the movie. Absolute beast of a woman. That was a great role. And then once I got out of high school, it's so hard getting into community theatre. I found that, you know, people know their people and they stick with their people, but then sometimes they'll take a chance on someone, and they took a chance on me in the Hamilton Gardens Arts Festival. That's where we do the Shakespeare in the Park, and I played Octavius in the Julius Caesar Shakespeare, and that sadly got canned because of COVID. but it was still wonderful nonetheless to meet everyone in the community scene in Hamilton and get my foot in the door. And yeah, I did a handful of plays and now I'm here and I just love it. I love it so much.
Mm. And I think too, like people say, you get your first job through talent and your next job through behaviour and, and likeness backstage. And like even what you're saying too with the fact that you go back to Shoreside. So, you know, Shoreside clearly has that environment, that ethos, that kaupapa that pulls people back. What about you, Christine? Tell us how, I mean, we've heard before, but tell us, how did it all kick off for you?
Oh, well, it kicked off, I went and saw my brother in a show when I was about 9 or 10, because he'd just started acting, and I watched him in a play and went, oh, I like that, I want to be up there, which shocked many people because I was very shy as a kid, like I barely would speak to anyone. So my mum thought I was absolutely nuts saying I wanted to do classes, but I did. I started classes at about 10 and never looked back. I did lots of shows. This was at Theatre Works in Birkenhead. I did shows with them up until high school, and then I took a bit of a break while at school just because I was trying to, you know, figure things out, see what I was going to do. But then I went back to Theatre Works after high school and went, oh no, I like this. So yeah, I carried on. I then stumbled across Shoreside, and yeah, never looked back. I've been in a couple of Shakespeares now, done an Agatha Christie, and yeah, and I've directed a couple of one acts. Keep that subtle. yeah, so I love acting and performing, but I think now for me, I'm now moving more into directing and producing and that sort of side of it. So that's why I like to be on the Shoreside Committee as well, because I'm excited and like to give opportunities to new people as well.
Well, I suppose the big thing is too, like Shoreside wouldn't exist if you didn't have a committee. So, sure. You know, it's so important for the committee to, one, govern, but two, produce and make it possible.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's very lucky that we have a small little group of us that are still dedicated and still want to keep Shoreside going for everyone that's involved, because our family is very big.
Mm. And I think too, again, the way that the world is going, it's actually really hard to get volunteers now.
Yes.
So for people to volunteer to be on a committee, not just in theatre, but in anything, I think volunteering is not what it was
when I was younger.
You know, it was kind of something you just, you did.
Yeah.
Being part of the community in some way was just a natural thing.
Yeah.
And I think too, I mean, there's a lot of schools now have service programs and things like that. But yeah, I just hear constantly that people are struggling to get volunteers.
Yeah.
Because it's not glamorous on the committee.
Oh. It's hard work, you know. We all have jobs. We all are wearing many hats within the community theatre as well. We're all in different places, but then we're still pulling together to keep Shoreside going. But it's with the help of also dedicated whānau that are with us that help keep it going. But you are always pulling out the feelers for more volunteers, so please come. Please join Shoreside.
And I suppose that's the other thing too, like you've just touched on, you've all got jobs. Now, both of you as actors probably have day jobs too that you go to and then you have to get along to rehearsal.
Yeah. I'm a communications advisor, so I actually work in PR and marketing and communications. So I guess radio is something that I'm somewhat familiar with. And yeah, I studied a communications degree at Waikato University and got my first job in Auckland, and now I live up here.
Fantastic. Yeah. But that's probably, has that been handy for Shoreside, having a PR person in the show?
Well, I actually just found out about it tonight because I hadn't had the chance of meeting Livy yet. So I'm holding on.
Great.
I'm very happy. And that's the thing, that the more people we meet and the more new people we meet, we get to know them and see where their fields are and apply that.
And a different expertise, definitely, for sure. Terry, what do you Where can you be found during the day?
Yeah, I just live and breathe theater. I'm a drama teacher and English and drama teacher at a secondary school. And so the I call them my babies, my little ones, the year 7 and 8, I do. So they're the ones you were saying about theater etiquette and training the younger generation to behave at a theater. That's one of the things that is high on my priority list, because it does make or break a production is the behavior of the audience. So, but also just to be encouraging, and it's hard work getting up there, and a lot of them are, like Christine was saying, the very shy kids who are very terrified of speeches and little skits, and the more they get exposed, the better. This is 21 years I've been teaching, and I adore it. I love it so much.
Fantastic.
Great. So it's very nice to have my hobby and my day job very closely related.
Yeah, definitely. All right. Well, we're coming towards the end. So let's get to the business end. So tell us, who's giving us the deets on where to and how to?
One moment, I can do that. cool, so I'll just get out my thing here, my notes. Even though I've done this 1,000 times with the dates, I should know. Cool, so the dates for And Then There Were None are the 18th of July to the 3rd of August. So it's very different to Agatha Christie last year. It's a new extended season. Because they've been so popular, we've decided to add an extra week just so that no one misses out. That's the 18th of July to 3rd of August, and you can get your tickets at the Pump House website, or you can phone them up, but it'd be pumphouse.co.nz. All the information will be there about tickets and prices. Yes, please come along.
Fantastic. And yeah, the Pump House, I love the fact that you can ring them to make bookings still.
Yes.
Like, there's not many places.
You can. There is
a
phone number.
Yeah.
It's on the website.
Yeah, I think that's fantastic. And so helpful for people that maybe are of the older generation that maybe aren't so apt at doing online bookings.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, it's been an interesting Sunday night with a few mistakes here and there on the board from me. And it's also been the end of a very busy week. Again, being school holidays, it means that for a lot of you, you're probably resetting your alarms and getting ready to get up tomorrow morning. It also meant that over the school holidays, there were lots of productions going on. So I meant to say at the beginning, but I was a bit flustered, that I actually had an extremely busy week. So I just wanted to give a big shout out. One, first of all, to New Plymouth Operatic Society for having me down at Chicago on Thursday night. It was absolutely phenomenal. The choreography, the whole concept was just great. And it hasn't finished yet. Don't think it finishes for another week, so maybe get down there. On Friday night, I struggled in the rain, but I decided to go anyway, and I'm so glad I did. I went to Pitt Street to see The Lightning Thief. Now, if you're a Percy Jackson fan, this is a musical that cannot be missed. It is on for another 4 shows yet at Pitt Street Theatre. Tickets are going fast, so get in to see Percy Jackson's The Lightning Thief. And then Saturday was a very musical day. I was hosted for 2 shows by National Youth Theatre. First of all, to the Pump House to see Dare to Dream Junior, which is a delightful celebration of all Disney musicals. And it was well done, put together in a week and a half. So well done to National Youth for that. And then I went to the most cup-filling, soul beautiful everything that you could, I don't know even how to describe it. It was the collaboration between National Youth Theatre and Blends, which is the blind New Zealand, and 14 actors with seeing, or not seeing, I should say, 6 seeing actors from NYT with the Blends students doing Wendy. Absolutely stunning. Not a dry eye in the house. Some of the, when just watching them perform and seeing how beautiful, I mean, and the voices, the talent, oh my God, I was absolutely blown away. So congratulations to National Youth Theatre for those 2 shows. Remember, if you've got a show coming up, we want to hear from you. Tell us, email us, dob someone in, as I said before about the music. That's at info@kickarts.org.nz. Now, next week, I'm back. Stephen's not. Sorry. Not sorry. But I might have a friend with me, I believe. I think Adam's here, and he's pretty good at pushing the right buttons on the board. So we look forward to that. In the meantime, I really do commend you to make sure that you have signed up to the Theatre List, which is actually run by a very prominent Shoreside member, Mr. Bell. It's a chance for you on the week, each week on a Sunday, to have in your arrive in your email inbox a list of things that are happening up here in Tamaki Makaurau. But remember, Kick Arts isn't just about Auckland, it's about the whole country. So we look forward to hearing from you. Now, to play out tonight, we are going out with the latest hit from Some Days called Syrah. And we hope that you go out there and kick some arts.
What's going on inside? Unloaded on me, yeah. Now you ain't gotta fight alone, no, no.
You know I got your back. I get it. Just say the word and you know that I'm with it. I ain't with the talking, I'm standing on business. You know we win it, only with God undefeated. If it ain't God, we don't need it. Ain't got much time on the meter. We gotta follow the leader. That's you and I. I know it ain't that easy living life. And when you see it's never really going right. No, you ain't gotta fight alone. No.
I got your back.
Okay, if there's one AI site builder you need to meet, it's a
okay, maybe I mistimed that one, but hopefully, shortly. We are, so kick some ass!
In a week, don't forget to brush your teeth and don't forget to go to sleep. We'll be going live, same time under the stars, saying blah, 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 blah. Let's go kick some ass.